Welcome to Clear Your Beliefs Session 7. I am very happy to have you here for the last of our 7 sessions together. This is the wrap-up pitch, like they have in baseball, the final pitch of the game. We're almost done. Now, I've noticed that in the realm of consciousness, whenever you think you're done, you find out that there's another layer deeper, or another level wider, or another dimension to explore. There's always more. I guess that proves that consciousness is infinite. In this session, we're going to wrap up some of the concepts that you've heard over the past 6 sessions, and we'll discuss where you can go from here and how you can use these tools to improve your life. I want to begin by talking about the body wisdom process I took you through in the last session. I consider this process to be a first aid kit for the mind. I want you to learn the process and practice it so that you can get good at it, because you can use it with friends and family members, even strangers who are in difficulty. This is a really effective process to keep in your pocket, and just bring it out to use whenever somebody's in the midst of a problem or a trauma. Just follow the steps. Now, I teach this process to coaches and therapists as part of my practitioner training, and I also want to offer it to you so that you can learn how to conduct this process. You'll find it in the resources section as a bonus. It's called the Body Wisdom Process. Now, it's best if you practice with a partner so that you can give and get feedback to each other and hone your skill. If you do it with someone, I'd love to hear how it worked and what happened. You can also use it on yourself and discover your subconscious beliefs. It's a great way to start your clearing process because it gets you in touch with the feel of the belief or whatever's going on. All belief change has to start with feel, because your subconscious mind uses feelings as one of its main languages. If you find yourself stuck and you don't know what to do, whether the block is physical or emotional or mental or spiritual, sit yourself down and do the body wisdom process. It will open up some space and give you some insight, I promise. Now, my opinion, my belief, and my experience is that when you do work in consciousness, you're having an impact on the world as well, improving it in some way. It's certainly true in your personal universe, and it can easily affect people that you're connected to, your family, your friends, your workmates, and the people you interact with every day. Your awareness ripples out and impacts other people, whether it's conscious or not. Everything you do to clean up your past and your resentments and your conflicts inside of you will have a positive rippling out effect on the local world. And everyone you touch will touch others, so it will continue to ripple out into the fabric of society and humanity. When you do work on yourself, when you heal yourself, you're also changing the world. The more work you do on this, the more benefits you accrue. Do every practice that you've learned here. It's a set of tools. They're ready to be used to better your life. So in this program, we've handed you these tools, and you're now the official carpenter of your own life. Use the tools to improve your life and then help others. Now, it's important to remember also that consciousness work is an important beginning, but it's not an end in itself. You also have to take right actions in the world. You have to get involved politically to change the political situation. You have to get involved economically to change your economic situation or economics itself. You have to get involved in efforts to end poverty in order to end poverty. You have to join together with others in organizations. That's part of consciousness expansion too. We grow in consciousness by working in groups, and we expand consciousness when we're physically in the presence of others. If you want to have a real impact on the world, clean up your own stuff and then leave your house and clean up some of the mess out there in the world. It's not going to get cleaned up by our own enlightenment, unfortunately. Almost everyone who experiences the belief closet process finds it amazing in one way or another. It's because consciousness is infinite. Now, hopefully, you've experienced something fantastic during our time together. There's something that happens when you begin communicating directly with the subconscious mind. It opens a channel of intuition and information that you may not have had before, or if you did, it strengthens it, it widens it, makes it more fluid and more helpful. And we've accumulated tens of thousands of beliefs during our lifetime. And there's probably only 3 to 5 big clusters of beliefs that are interfering with your full self-expression and your magnificence and your creation of the life you want. Those clusters have been with you for a long time, since you were very small. Each cluster might have 5 to 10 beliefs that kind of hang together and reinforce each other. Kind of like a mutual support group for beliefs. They strengthen each other, then they can resist change together. Now, it takes some work to clear them, and it can be done. You may have only 12 beliefs that really interfere with your life, and maybe 100 or 2 that jump up and express themselves when you try to create something new. Now, you might have heard it said that we have tens of thousands of thoughts every day, and 95% of them are the same thoughts we had yesterday and the day before. If you clear the really big bad dozen or so, you'll be changing a huge number of those thoughts because they're being driven by those belief clusters. I told the story in an earlier class about one of my clients who I taught this process to, and he went off by himself and discreated 200 beliefs in 2 months. And when he called me and he told me that, I asked him, well, how are you? How are you feeling? And he said, I don't recognize myself. Now, this was a guy who could barely pay the rent at that time, and he's now involved in multimillion dollar deals. So that's a good goal for you, 200 beliefs in 2 months. That's only 5 beliefs a day, 5 days a week for 2 months. And even if you do only 1 a day every day, you can shift 60 beliefs in 2 months. That's 5 dozen. So you can really clear up what's in your way if you do the practice, if you work through and clear the clusters and the big negative stuff that comes up. We've shown you how easy it is. And if you really want to change your life, you've got the tool. All you need is the commitment to action. This isn't a magic bullet. It doesn't work by itself. You have to do the work. It's a tool that works if you work it. You can free yourself completely so that you're not held back anymore. You can actually manifest your life purpose and a good life and whatever the heck you want. That's my pitch to you. It's to keep going. Keep using the tool set on your own. Listen to the classes over again. Find a practice partner so you can stay on track and keep each other accountable. Since you have a choice, you might as well create a great life. I want to talk about endings for a minute. Now, there's a very natural and very uncomfortable feeling or a set of feelings that come when something is ending, no matter what it is. When your kid goes off to college, when you sell a house and move, or when a job ends, or when a relationship ends, what can come up is confusion, grief, discomfort. Endings are tough. Now remember, I said that when an experience is experienced fully, it can move or change or disappear. And there are a lot of strategies available for not feeling the feelings that come up around any negative experience, like an ending. You can look the other way. You can not go to the after party. You can do something else to avoid those feelings. Or you can ignore the feelings and pretend they don't exist. Or get distracted by something else. That's one of my favorites. Now, eventually you come to the ending and you have to face it in some way. If you don't experience the feelings at the end, you have to experience them later. One of my greatest teachers said that you have a choice. You can either feel a very bad feeling completely, intensely, for a very short period of time, or you can feel it very subtly for a really long period of time. Now, in this culture, we have a lot of beliefs and taboos about endings and death. In Hinduism, there are 3 major gods, kind of like the Trinity in Christianity. They're Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. They represent birth, life, and death, or more commonly, the creator, the sustainer, preserver, and the destroyer. And all 3 are important aspects of life. In the West, in our Judeo-Christian cultures, we don't like destruction. We try to avoid it or prevent it. We don't like death. Death is taboo. Now, this is changing a little over time, but when someone dies, we don't really know how to handle it. People get depressed. They go into long periods of mourning and grief. If it happens to a friend of yours or a loved one, we often don't know how to comfort them or talk with them or support them. Now, death itself used to be a very hush-hush subject, like it was bad luck to talk about it. And we still have a lot of beliefs about death, like death is bad or death is wrong or we should hold off death. In the medical profession, 80% of the expenses spent on healthcare in most people's lifetimes is spent in the last few weeks or months of a person's life. We go to extraordinary lengths to hold death off, to keep a person alive for one more week or one more month or even a day, to the point of being ridiculous. What's wrong with death? To the Hindus, death and destruction is part of life. It's what creates something new. To build a house, you have to destroy some of the landscape. To eat, you have to kill plants or animals. It's just part of life. In the belief closet, we use this principle. We destroy beliefs when we say, I don't need you anymore. I'm now going to send you back to the nothingness from which you came. And we put them in the fire, which is the element of dissolution. That's an act of destruction. So I want to bring this up to your attention so you can integrate this fact that endings are good. When something is no longer useful, get rid of it. Leaves fall off before the winter and they regrow in the spring. The elders of a generation die in order to make way for the next generation of wise elders. And hopefully they're wiser. Trees die and fall over to make way for younger trees. A painter destroys a perfectly good white canvas in the act of painting. So we need to destroy what is in order to create what could be. And by the way, each of the gods that I mentioned has a mate or a consort representing the feminine side of each force. For example, Brahma's consort is Sarasvati. She's the patroness of art and music and literature, and she was the creator of the Sanskrit language, which is a holy language. Vishnu's wife is Lakshmi, the goddess of luck and prosperity. She's also called Sita and Radha. Shiva's wife is Parvati in its benevolent aspect, the growth that occurs on top of the fertile, composted soil. There's also a destructive or awesome aspect named Durga and Kali, who both look very fearsome, but they're really destroying ignorance and evil. These are archetypal forces. The archetypes are representations of common elements within the collective subconscious. Every god and goddess in the religions of the past are archetypes. So are the astrological signs and tarot cards and symbols and alchemical processes, even superheroes and comic strip characters. And because you are part of the collective unconscious, you have access to these forces. You could say that these archetypes are inside of you. For example, you have an inner warrior whose energy you could tap into when you need some courage. You have an inner queen or king, both actually, that are meant to grow into you as you mature from a prince or a princess. You have a teacher inside of you and also a student. You have a cooperative collaborator and also a rebel. You have many inner children, a hurt child and a tyrannical child that can throw a fit. These are all parts of you. Now, in the belief closet, you can easily make contact with these larger forces. They're here to support your life. If you don't have contact with them, or if you push them away, you may not be as effective as you could be. Archetypes have power, and many of us are afraid of power because we've seen it misused. It's not easy to find examples of positive power in our culture. I guess the superheroes are about as close as we get. They go off and save people's lives, and everyone loves them. Now, earlier cultures had lots of gods and goddesses with lots of different characteristics. We mostly see power misused by politicians and government officials and corporate executives and the military. We know the power of the tyrant. You may have had a boss or a family member who's holding that energy. They're usually very powerful and destructive. A lot of people who have encountered misused power react by saying, I'm never going to be like that. That's a belief, right? A conclusion, a consciously chosen shunning of power because it could become destructive. Now, as we grow up, we're supposed to learn discernment and the good channeling of our power. But a lot of people just don't want to get near their own power. I'm not going to be powerful, and they shut down their own power and they become ineffective. You can contact any of these larger forces through the belief closet process, and I want to show you how. So get ready for a journey into your belief closet. Get yourself comfortable. This is going to be a fairly quick trip, but a very interesting one.